look at what I'm doing. The best one is that I'm having a vacation. And I have not really had a vacation in about 10 years. So I decided to do it musically. Seems like only yesterday I left my mind behind. Down the gypsy cafe with a friend of mine, who sat with baby heavy on her knee. Spoke of life most free from slavery, with eyes that showed no trace of misery. Phrase and connection first was she. Occurred that love is just a four-letter word.
So if you don't appreciate my love of music, you can blame Bob Dylan. I'm sure if you write him, he'll be glad to respond. I first encountered his songs in a songbook that was put out for Christian youth groups. And when I started to explore ideas and music beyond in some new realms, I remembered his name and thought, I'm going to kind of check this guy out. And so I sought out some of his music. And you can't really know all about Bob Dylan's music without also knowing a little bit about Joan Baez. Joan Baez also sang a lot of Bob Dylan songs. She recorded an entire album of Bob Dylan covers, and that's one of the songs that she has recorded of Bob Dylan's that he's never recorded himself. It's a song called "Love Is Just a Four-Letter Word." The song is a connected series of scenes and thoughts as the singer puzzles over the idea that love really isn't anything more than that four-letter word, something that covers disappointment and heartache, something that's supposed to last but doesn't. The song is beautifully sung. And yet, if you look at the lyrics, it's kind of a depressing song. And by the end of it, the singer says that he or she doesn't need any assurance to know that love is just a four-letter word. A few weeks ago, Julie and I watched last year's Academy Award-winning film, Birdman. If you've seen it, it's kind of a strange movie. Interesting, but kind of a strange movie. It's a movie about an actor who at one time had played a superhero in Hollywood, Birdman, and he's on Broadway. He wants to do a more serious play. And early on in the movie, they show a part of the play he's putting on. And as the dialogue is going on, I said to Julie, and I think there were a couple of others of us watching, I said, you know, that's a Raymond Carver short story. And in a little while, you figure out that, yeah, what the Birdman guy is doing is trying to bring to Broadway a play based on the short stories of Raymond Carver, particularly a story with the title, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. That story is about as cheery as the Joan Baez song, Love Is Just a Four-Letter Word. It will turn around after a while, but we're going to go a little bit deeper into the depths here. The story, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love, is about four people sitting around a table drinking gin and talking about love. And the two couples are married, but for one, it is a second marriage, and both of them had difficult first relationships. And probably the most painful moment in this short story is when a woman named Terry talks about a former boyfriend who was abusive towards her. And yet she continues to say what you want to. It may sound crazy to you. Sometimes he may have acted crazy, okay, but he loved me. In his own way, maybe, but he loved me. You know, we talk a lot about love here. Our mission statement says that we are guided by the teachings and unconditional love of Jesus. We talk about love here, but how is our talk about love different from the talk about love in the world around us, where sometimes love is little more than a four-letter word? Where love sometimes masks abusive behavior and controlling behavior, or where love is just seen as kind of squishy and soft and, you know, puddly, or where love is fickle. A while back, I had read a book about F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel, The Great Gatsby, and I thought, you know, I never read Fitzgerald's first novel, which was his most popular novel, which earned him a lot of money and which allowed him to get married to his wife, Zelda. So I thought, you know, I think I'd like to do that. So I read it, This Side of Paradise. It is a coming-of-age story of a young man named Amory Blaine, who, like Fitzgerald himself, was from St. Paul and going to college out east. The novel includes no shortage of episodes about love. Here's a couple of lines from the book. Within 2 weeks, Amory and Rosalind were deeply and passionately in love. The critical qualities which had spoiled for each of them a dozen romances were dulled by the great wave of emotion that washed over them. I mean, isn't that a wonderful popular culture idea about love? Waves of emotion washing over 2 weeks and you're deeply and passionately in love. But there are some problems in the relationship. Rosalind is from a well-to-do family, and Amory, while his family had some money, it was coming to an end. He's working for an advertising agency. Rosalind's mother warns her daughter, "You'd be dependent absolutely on a dreamer, a nice, well-born boy, but a dreamer, merely clever." Well, another man appears on the scene, a guy Rosalind likes well enough, and he has more money, and he wants to marry Rosalind. So she tells Amory, "We're pitiful, that's all. The very qualities I love you for are the ones that will always make you a failure." She goes on, "Marrying you would be a failure, and I never fail." I'm not sure what happened to the great waves of emotion that happened in that 2 weeks, but Rosalind figures out that you can't just live on emotion, you got to have money, and she's chosen someone else. I mean, is that love? Is that what we talk about when we talk about love? We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses to help? Little children, let us love, not in word or speech, but in truth and action. Eugene Peterson, in his translation of the New Testament, renders that last line this way: "Let's not just talk about love, let's practice real love." That's the kind of love we're talking about and trying to live out, a love that comes from first knowing that we are loved, loved by a God who's bigger than our hearts, loved with a love that fills us and overflows our hearts. We love from a generous heart, and our love moves us beyond even debilitating self-criticism, to use Eugene Peterson's line in translating part of this verse. We're filled with love, and it overflows from generous hearts. And the writer of 1 John says pretty strong things about this kind of love, that it's at work actively and truthfully. The writer says, when we love, we abide in God. When we love, we hang with God. We remain in God's sphere of influence. We continue to pay attention to the whisper of God's Spirit in our lives. Now, in some sense, God's Spirit, God never stops trying to influence us. That's the very meaning of the concept of grace. But I think what the writer of 1 John is getting at is that when we love, that's when we know we're paying attention to that movement of God's Spirit in our lives. When we live with generous hearts and spirits, when we care for those in need, we know that we're hanging with God. This is what we talk about when we talk about love. It's why for us, love isn't just a four-letter word. And our understanding of love affects who we are and what we are about together. Someone this week asked me for my definition of the church. It needed to be brief, 50 words. And my initial reaction, was, well, you know, I think I'd like to think about this, do a little research, and get back to you. That sort of academic side, just it's there. But I thought about it for a little while, and I thought, you know, I've thought about this a lot. And every day I try to live out something of my understanding of the church. So a couple hours after the request came, I typed, "The church is a community of people who have been touched by God's grace and love in Jesus Christ and who are seeking to live in such a way, individually and together, that they grow in love of God and others and witness to the grace of God and Jesus." And I sent it off. And you know what was really sort of sent chills? When I finished, I did a word count. 50 words. Maybe sometimes doing research isn't such a good thing. But that's how I see it. That's how I see what it means to be the church, to be this community on the Jesus way. We seek to love each other and grow in love individually and together and live that out. That's what we talk about when we talk about love. Love is more than a four-letter word. And our love extends beyond our community. One morning this week, I attended a workshop on adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. Such experiences include things such as feeling humiliated or threatened by an adult in your home when you were a child, being physically abused by an adult in the home, being sexually abused by an adult, feeling no one in your family loved or supported you, parental separation or divorce, lack of food or clothing, or parents too chemically dependent to care about that for you, a mother or stepmother physically abused, chemical dependency or abuse in the household, a household member significantly depressed or suicidal, household member incarcerated. The workshop talked about how those kinds of experiences in childhood have long-lasting effects. And it developed themes that I've also found in Robert Putnam's recent book, Our Kids, where he writes this: "Recent research has greatly expanded our understanding of how young children's early experiences and socioeconomic environment influence their neurobiological development, and how, in turn, early neurobiological development influences their later lives. These effects turn out to be powerful and long-lasting. Early environments powerfully affect the architecture of the developing brain." And then Putnam goes on to write, "Kids at any socioeconomic level can encounter such adverse experiences, but those who grow up in low-income, less educated families are at considerably greater risk." And I hear that, and then I hear these words again from 1 John. "If you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears. And you made it disappear." Somehow love has something to do with how it is we try to make our world a better place for kids. And where kids have had these kinds of experiences, how we can together help them be more resilient. During that workshop on adverse childhood experiences, a woman shared a story. The woman's name is Sarah Lund. She told me I could share this story and her name, and I wanted to share her name because Sarah, in addition to being a hospital chaplain, also convenes a group called Blue Star Mothers. Blue Star Mothers is a group of moms who get together who have children in the military, and we give them space to meet here once a month. But Sarah shared this story from her experience as a hospital chaplain. She said one day she entered a hospital room, and the patient said to her, "You are the very last person I would want to see." Now, for many of us, that would have been a nice invitation to say goodbye. And, you know, you want to be sensitive to people in that situation. They really don't want to see you. You don't want to hang around. You don't want to, you know, be pesty. But Sarah had this sense that, well, maybe that ought not to be the end of the conversation just like that. So she said, "You know, that is absolutely the very most interesting thing I have heard all day." And the man invited her to talk for a little while. And she asked him what would make him say that she would be the last person he wanted to see. And she heard about his life and some of his difficulties and his difficulties with the church. And after a bit, he said to Sarah, "You know, if I were a praying person, this would be about the time I'd ask you to pray for me." And she said, "Well, if I were to pray for you, this is exactly the prayer I would pray." And she said it to him. I was just in awe. What an ingenious thing. But I also thought, you know, being willing to be with people when they're hurting and angry, that too is a form of love and action. Love that's more than a four-letter word. Love that is about truth. And that's what we talk about when we talk about love. May God's Spirit fill us with love, with a love that our hearts cannot contain, a love that overflows for others more and more with knowledge and full insight, to use a phrase from Philippians, a love that overflows in actions. That's what we talk about when we talk about love. That's what we try to live when we live as a loving community. That's what makes love for us so much more than a four-letter word. May it continue to be so. Amen.